It's March 2006. Microsoft's new games console, the Xbox 360, has been out for 5 months, and it's selling like gangbusters. Calls from new Xbox 360 owners are inundating Microsoft's consumer support call center in Redmond, Washington. Most of the calls the center gets are easy to resolve, but on this dreary March day, an unusual call comes in. This is Xbox Technical Support. How may I help you today?
My Xbox 360, it won't turn on.
Okay, sir. Let's see if we can resolve that problem for you.
It worked fine yesterday, but today nothing. I press the on button and the fan starts, but then nothing. All that happens is the circle of lights on the front of the Xbox turn red instead of the usual green.
The lights turn red?
Yeah.
Okay, sir. Would you please hold on for a moment? The Xbox support worker hasn't heard this one before. She figures the solution must be buried in one of her call center scripts, but she finds nothing about red lights. Thank you for waiting, sir. Unfortunately, this isn't a problem we can fix over the phone. You'll have to return your Xbox 360 so we can either fix it or provide a replacement. After the frustrated caller hangs up, the support worker logs a report about the problem and forgets about it. It's the Xbox engineering team's problem now. But the red lights are no random defect. In the next few weeks, the call center gets flooded with calls from frustrated Xbox 360 owners, all reporting the same problem. By the end of the year, the initial trickle of complaints has become a torrent. Across the world, Xbox 360s are dying by the thousands, and Microsoft has no idea why. On internet forums, frustrated gamers saddled with dead Xbox 360s have given the problem a name. They call it the Red Ring of Death, and it's threatening to destroy Microsoft's multi-billion dollar quest to conquer the games business. From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. You're listening to episode 2 in our series, Xbox versus PlayStation, the Red Ring of Death. In the last episode, Microsoft invaded the video game console market with the Xbox. The software giant threw $5 billion into beating the PlayStation 2. But it wasn't enough to loosen Sony's grip on the console market. So now, Microsoft's suiting up for battle again, armed this time with the Xbox 360, the games console it hopes will finally vanquish the PlayStation. It's February 2003, and the Xbox executive team is hunkered down at the Salish Lodge and Spa in Snoqualmie, Washington. This grand mountainside hotel was once the backdrop in David Lynch's surreal TV series Twin Peaks, but today, it's getting a new claim to fame. Armed with some damn fine coffee, the Xbox team is holed up in one of the hotel's meeting rooms. Views of evergreens and mountains abound, but the team hardly notices. They're in a focused mood. Sony's just partnered with IBM and Toshiba on an advanced microprocessor to power the PlayStation 3. The Microsoft team is plotting its response. A new games console called the Xbox 360. The walls of the meeting room are covered in huge rolls of paper onto which the team has scrawled keywords and mind maps. Ideas and bubbles are connected by lines that look like giant spider webs. All of this is starting to coalesce into a vision for the Xbox 360. Xbox chief Robbie Bach is leading the brainstorming. He's a man under immense pressure. Microsoft lost $5 billion with the first Xbox, an indulgence the Xbox division won't get this time around.
Senior management's losing patience with our losses. We have to be profitable by 2007. We could do that by not putting a hard drive in the Xbox 360. Putting a hard drive in the first Xbox cost us hundreds of millions.
Jay Allard is horrified by the suggestion. He's the mastermind of Xbox Live, Microsoft's online gaming service.
No way! Xbox Live is what sets us apart from the PlayStation, and it needs that hard drive. Internet connections are getting fast enough for us to sell games online for Xbox 360 owners to download. But if you don't have a hard drive, they won't be able to store the games they download. We're going to have to find another way.
Bach proposes a compromise.
How about this? We sell a basic Xbox 360 without a hard drive, and a more expensive version with a hard drive.
The team backs the idea. Next, they have to figure out when to launch the Xbox 360. High-definition graphics will be the big selling point of the next generation of consoles. But that requires players to start buying high-definition TVs. One Xbox executive's already researched the HD TV market.
The projections are that HD TVs will be cheap enough for mass market adoption within 2 years, by the beginning of 2005.
Bach mulls over this information.
Okay, well, why don't we aim to launch the Xbox 360 in 2005 as sales of HD TVs start to rise? The PlayStation 3 probably won't be ready until 2006, I guess, so that would also give us a year-long head start over Sony.
The team agrees. The Xbox 360 will be a game console built for HD TVs. It'll feature an enhanced version of Xbox Live, an online store for buying games, and, in a break with the past, wireless game controllers. With a plan now in place, the team starts packing up. Suddenly, one executive yells for them to stop.
Wait, we've only talked about beating Sony. What about Nintendo?
The rest of the team looks at each other and shrugs. Nintendo seems like a company in decline. For the last 20 years, Nintendo sold fewer and fewer home consoles with each new release. What's more, Nintendo lacks the deep pockets and engineering expertise of Sony and Microsoft. As far as the team is concerned, the next round in the console wars is a two-way fight. Sony versus Microsoft. Nintendo's toast. Microsoft and Sony have become just a bit too overconfident because Nintendo is about to upend both their plans. It's June 2006. 3 years after the Mountainside Xbox 360 brainstorming session. And now, the Xbox team is at the massive E3 Games Expo in Los Angeles. They're feeling confident. Last November, the Xbox 360 arrived in stores. Microsoft's already sold millions of them. The hype's also building fast for an upcoming Xbox 360 game called Gears of War. It's a gritty shooter set in a ruined world that's taking center stage at Microsoft's conference booth. It's poised to join Halo as another compelling reason to buy an Xbox 360. But Microsoft knows everything rests on the new consoles Sony and Nintendo will announce at E3. Sony's presentation is first, and PlayStation Vice President Kazuo Hirai has some impressive tech to show.
The PlayStation 3 is the most powerful games console ever made.
Hirai lists the PlayStation 3 features the Xbox 360 lacks. The PlayStation 3's got crisper HD visuals and it can play Blu-ray movies too. The PlayStation 3 will have an online gaming service as well, but unlike other companies, it will be free. The Microsoft team squirms in their seats. Xbox Live costs $50 a year. Finally, Hirai reveals the Cell, the PlayStation 3's advanced microprocessor. Sony spent millions creating the Cell, but behind the hype, there's a problem. The Cell's unfamiliar design is a game maker's nightmare. Game programmers are struggling to get the PlayStation 3 to do basic tasks, like display graphics on screen. As a result, Sony is short on games, and the ones they have fail to impress gamers. Hirai plows on, building towards the crucial moment. He smiles as he breaks the news.
The PlayStation 3 will launch in America this November and retail at $599.
The audience gasps. $599? No successful games console has ever cost that much. And what the audience doesn't know is that even at that price, Sony will lose money on every PlayStation 3 it sells. On hearing the news, the Xbox team high-five each other, relieved. An entry-level Xbox 360 costs just $300. Next, it's Nintendo's moment in the E3 spotlight. Nintendo's been even more secretive than usual about its new console. All anyone knows is that it's called the Wii. The lights in the auditorium dim, and Shigeru Miyamoto, the creator of Mario, walks on stage. He's dressed like the conductor of an orchestra. Behind him, a screen shows a cartoon orchestra holding their instruments. And Miyamoto seems ready to lead the orchestra with something in his right hand. And it's not a baton. The audience squints to get a closer look. The object looks like a white TV remote. Miyamoto reaches the middle of the stage, turns to the audience, and bows. Then he starts waving his arms like a conductor, and the cartoon orchestra springs into life. This is Nintendo's surprise. That white TV remote is the Wii's game controller, and it's like nothing anyone's seen before. The Wii lets people play games through movement instead of button mashing. The audience watches a video. A teenage girl swings the controller and a virtual baseball slugger whacks the ball out of the stadium. A little kid steers a plane through the skies by twisting and turning a Wii controller. A blonde woman putts a golf ball with a Wii remote. The audience is both impressed and confused. The Wii seems magical, but it's so left field, so unexpected, that no one in the games business has any clue if it's genius or folly. It doesn't take long before they know the answer. In November 2006, the Wii goes on sale and becomes a sensation. Within 8 days, Americans buy more than 500,000 Wiis. In Europe, it becomes the fastest-selling console of all time. Within weeks, the Wii is outselling the Xbox 360. For Sony, things are very different. Sony might have crushed Microsoft and Nintendo with a PlayStation 2, but now the tables have turned. Saddled with a sky-high price, the PlayStation 3 lags behind the Wii and the Xbox 360. But Microsoft's distracted. It's facing a bigger problem than Nintendo, and that problem is the Red Ring of Death. Xbox 360s are keeling over at an alarming rate. Some estimates claim as many as 25% of Xbox 360s are breaking down. The average consumer electronics product has a 2% failure rate. In May 2007, with the internet on fire about the Red Ring of Death and Xbox 360 sales plummeting, Xbox boss Robbie Bach summons a crisis meeting at his Seattle home.
We're in serious trouble. Xbox 360s are dying fast and we don't have a fix. And many of the consoles that are breaking down are now outside their one-year warranty period. Players won't want to pay to fix them, and they'll stop paying for Xbox Live and buying games. We've got to address this. The question is how.
Deep down, everyone in the room knows what Microsoft must do. It's got to extend the warranty and keep fixing and replacing dead Xbox 360s, whatever the cost. Because if they don't, the Xbox brand could be damaged beyond repair. The executives start estimating the cost of extending the warranty to 3 years. There's shipping costs, staff time, replacement parts, and a whole lot more to consider. Bach stares in silence at the final figure for a moment. Then, he holds up the sheet of paper to show the rest of the team. There are gasps. One executive swears. The number on the sheet is $1.5 billion. 2 months later, Microsoft extends the Xbox 360 warranty. It's not a fix, but it gets the fire under control and buys Microsoft time to figure out how to stop the red ring of death occurring in new Xbox 360s. Now, Microsoft and Sony need to deal with Nintendo's Wii and its cool new motion controllers. But Microsoft doesn't want to just copy Nintendo. It wants to take what Nintendo started to the next level. And it's going to do that by getting rid of the game controller entirely.
I'm Sydney Page, and I'm so excited to tell you about my podcast, Sydney in the Sheets. Each week, me and my friends talk about incredible ways to help you transform your life inside and out of the bedroom. I know there are lots of other sex podcasts out there, but I was really intimidated by them. That's why I created something that felt more like a conversation you'd have with your girlfriends. A sex-positive podcast that is actually made by women for women. Not enough people are talking about how to make sex a better experience for women. So we're going to be talking about losing your virginity, body count, purity culture, sex positions, lube, and everything in between. We'll be talking about the good, the bad, and the uncomfortable and embarrassing parts of sex and relationships, because no one should be having bad sex. To listen, follow Sydney in the Sheets on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you listen. You can also listen ad-free by subscribing to Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app.
Hi, I'm Lindsey Graham, the host of Wondery Show American Scandal. Our newest series looks at a government lab that ignited a fierce debate about the war on drugs. With accusations of large-scale fraud, the lab would cause thousands of convictions to be overturned. Listen now to American Scandal, or listen early and ad-free in the Wondery app.
Alex Kipman sits in his office in Redmond, Washington, and stares at the list in his hands. Kipman's the quick-thinking 30-something who runs the Xbox R&D team, but this list has left him momentarily speechless. He looks up at the man who gave him the list, Xbox executive Don Matrick.
You want me to create this? Seriously?
It's early 2008, and Matrick wants Microsoft to gatecrash Nintendo's motion-controlled gaming revolution. Kipman scans through Matrick's wish list once more. A hands-free controller with a camera to track body movements. It must be able to recognize different individuals. Also needs a microphone so it can respond to voice commands. As Kipman's eyes reach the bottom of the list, Matrick adds another request.
Of course, the device must do all this really fast. Players won't like it if there's a perceptible delay between their actions and what happens on screen.
Kipman ponders the list for a moment. None of these asks seem even remotely possible. This is the stuff of science fiction movies. Then again, Kipman's always loved a challenge.
Okay, I'll see what I can do.
Kipman assembles a team and codenames the task Project Natal, after the town in Brazil where he grew up. Project Natal seems impossible, but to his surprise, Kipman discovers that Microsoft already has much of what he needs. For the next year, Kipman travels the world hunting down research papers and experts in far-flung corners of the Microsoft empire. In Redmond, he discovers a team that spent years working on speech recognition software. In Beijing, he finds extensive research into facial recognition technology. In Tel Aviv, Kipman meets a company using infrared sensors and cameras to track people's body movements. In England, computer vision specialists help the device to adapt to changes in people's body size. And in cities throughout the Western world, Kipman's team record the voices of hundreds of people with different accents and dialects. Recordings that will help the Xbox understand the voice commands of as many people as possible. By June 2009, the prototype is closer to the original vision
than anyone dared imagine. After watching Project Natal perform, one Microsoft executive exclaims,
"Wow, it's like something out of Star Trek."
Project Natal is renamed Kinect, and as its November 2010 release approaches, the excitement is huge.
Shake everything, except a controller, because now you are the controller.
Kinect's also armed with games that mirror the Wii's greatest hits. Instead of Wii Sports, there's Kinect Sports. And to match the get fit through play appeal of Wii Fit, there's Your Shape. But Sony's got an answer to the Wii 2, a flashlight-shaped controller for the PlayStation 3 called PlayStation Move. Sony's touting Move as more accurate than the Wii and more versatile than Kinect. To ram the point home, Sony launches an attack ad against Kinect.
Plus, PlayStation Move's not only crazy precise, it's also got what we in the future call buttons, which turn out to be pretty important to those handful of millions of people who enjoy playing shooters, platformers, or, well, anything that doesn't involve catching a big red ball. So, I mean, come on. Who wants to pretend their hand is a gun? What is this, third grade?
But Sony's digs at Kinect put few people off. Within 2 months of launch, Microsoft sells 8 million Kinects. The Guinness Book of World Records declares Kinect the fastest-selling consumer electronics device in history. Kinect's too late to stop the Wii, but it gives the Xbox 360 enough of a boost to keep Microsoft ahead of Sony. And just in time, too. Since its stumbling debut, the PlayStation 3's been catching up with the Xbox 360. First, Sony redesigned the PlayStation 3 so it could sell it for less and neutralize the Xbox 360's price advantage. Then, Sony began winning back fans with a run of impressive PlayStation-only games, including the motorsports juggernaut Gran Turismo 5 and the ultra-violent God of War 3.
Death is in my blood.
Set in ancient Greece, God of War 3 features a pantheon of monsters and gods. PlayStation 3 draws 80 million users. But Microsoft's Xbox 360 is still ahead with 84 million gamers. Still, Nintendo's out in front. It's sold more than 100 million Wiis. But the Xbox team feels it's only scratched the surface of what Kinect can do. And they know Sony and Nintendo can't offer anything like it. So, as the games industry edges toward a new generation of consoles, Microsoft makes a big decision. It's going to put Kinect at the heart of the next Xbox. And that's a decision Microsoft will soon come to regret. In the next and final episode of Xbox vs. PlayStation, Microsoft is ready to take over the world's living rooms. But can Sony reconnect with players in time to stop Xbox's race to the top? From Wondery, this is Business Wars. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You'll find a link on the episode notes. Simply tap or swipe over the cover art. You'll also see some offers from our sponsors. Please support our show by supporting them, won't you? And if you like what you've heard, we'd love it if you could give us a 5-star rating and tell your friends how to subscribe too. Another way to support us is to answer a short survey at wondery.com/survey. And don't forget to tell us what business war stories you'd like to hear. A quick note about the conversations you've been hearing. We can't know exactly what was said, but this dialogue is based on our best research. I'm your host, David Brown. Tristan Donovan wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer. Emily Frost is our editor, and Jenny Lauer is our producer. Sound designed by Bay Area Sound. Our executive producer is Marshall Louie, created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.